This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, everybody, to Eat, Sleep, Elite. I am Charlie, joined, as always, by the Digital Phantom, the Digital Duke. So, the vibes are unbelievable. All in. It just happened. Today is our post-show, Eat, Sleep, Elite. We are a weekly AEW review podcast.
That's when I wish I had access to the soundboard. I'd do what you do. I'd start hitting the, I'm better than you.
Right? And yeah, so as always, we will be going over the title reviews that did change. I think that's always fun to do. And
not like half the titles or anything like last year at All In, which was necessary last year. It wasn't like half of them. It was more than a couple. But like there's a couple and we'll talk about them. That's kind of our tradition here. We like our traditions here. We're like AEW.
So that being said, it's pay-per-view time.
Should we go All In?
Hey there, buddy.
Overall thoughts, Duke. So just how were your overall vibes right now, post-show? How are you feeling?
Yeah, so as I revealed to everybody last Tuesday, or I guess last Wednesday, depending on when you listen to this. I guess you could have listened to it last Friday, too, but like you might have been a little behind on wrestling at that point. But, you know, whenever you happen to catch last week's show, I did mention that I was going to be working yesterday. So I did end up working yesterday, so I did not get to watch the show live. Did see a couple of spoilers. I saw the Ricochet one. I saw... What else did I see? There was one other one that I saw. Oh! No, what was it? There was one other random thing that I saw. It wasn't like a big deal, but I happened to catch it. It was something like, it was also, oh, it was Nigel. Which again, these are things that I thought maybe could happen this year. So, you know, like, it's not like, seeing that they happened made me just more excited to flip on the show when I got home. You know what I mean? And then you told me, hey, something happens on the pre-show. You should definitely watch the pre-show. And I was like, just tell me, because if you don't tell me, I'm not going to watch the pre-show. No offense to the pre-show guys, by the way. When I'm not there live for the pre-show, it's so hard to get me to go back and watch it.
I could not agree more.
So I'm just being honest with everybody. If y'all don't like that and would like me to, for the future, watch every pre-show match because of how much respect I give to the people that end up on those cards anyway, then I'm down to. But I just, for right now, especially yesterday, because of how busy I was, I just didn't have the time. So I just watched the stuff from the pre-show that was important. But I just gotta say, like, things like that made me super hyped heading into the show. I was very, very hyped for this. It's one of those things where I looked at the fucking calendar this week, Charlie, or last week, I guess, and I was like, shit, the pay-per-view is this Sunday. Here we go. You know, like,
yeah.
And because I don't know about you, the build for this has felt so natural and so, like, I've been so, like, just following along with the stories that I didn't realize how close we actually were because of how locked in I've been on wrestling, you know, like, and yeah, I mean, I guess my overall thoughts on the show is I really, really enjoyed the show. I don't think anything missed, dude. I think it's amazing, but I think we had the biggest show of AEW's year, and I don't think a single match was bad on it. I don't think a single match was too long. I don't think there was any matches that I would have changed anything in, and I think most of the results, if not all of them, were correct, you know, like, and we got to see fucking Nigel McGuinness wrestle in 2024, dude. Well, I just cannot get over the fact that we saw Nigel motherfucking McGuinness wrestling in an AEW ring in front of like 40-50, do we have the account, by the way, 40-50,000 people in Wembley Stadium.
It was over 50K, so.
I know that's what the number was looking. I know they were set up for like 50-60, I think. It was less than last year, but it got pretty close. I don't think it ever sold out. It got up there, you know? I mean, I think that's to be expected, you know, because I think they knew they weren't hitting 80,000 again. I think that was a once-in-a-lifetime show. They're never going to recreate that. They could, too. You know what? They could recreate numbers like that in Texas, though. Like, I don't know how big you can get numbers in Texas, but it could be like 68K or something. Like, we should find out how big that stadium is that they're going for All In and see what the number could be, you know, like.
And that's not the only big show they announced. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think overall, I think the show stuck the landing, right? Especially with the home run at the end. And we will get into that at the end.
I don't know. That might have been a grand slam to fucking win the World Series at the end. I don't know. That might have been the greatest booking decision.
Save the best this might be for last.
It might be the greatest booking decision of all time. Like, it genuinely might be. Like, I think Tony Khan might have done it.
How they set the show up, it added to the spectacle. Everything felt bigger. And I think that was a soft complaint from last year is not everything. There was no big entrances. Like, there was like one, maybe two. Everyone got a big thing. It was truly All
everyone
was,
except for Britt Baker got a big entrance for some reason. I don't
all
know
in was truly a fucking spectacle.
What was that about? Britt Baker was just like, yeah, I'm Britt Baker.
Wouldn't doubt it. But that being said, we're going to go through the show. I will take us through the kickoff here. So we had some party matches at the beginning. We had Tommy Billington, Kip Sabian, Rocky Romero, Kyle Fletcher, Action Andretti, Leo Rush, and Top Flight defeat Jay Lethal, Satnam Singh, Anthony Ogogo. Awesome to see him. Ari Daivari, Private Party, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds. Just to get the crowd in, you know.
I feel like this is like a shout out to these guys. They've all been wrestling pretty frequently in this build of this pay-per-view, but they just didn't have anything for them. So we'll throw them in a 10-man.
In here.
Is this a 10-man tag? Is that how many people were on both sides?
Two, or four, six, eight, 16-man tag.
That's a lot, but I'm sure they made it work.
Yeah, it was fine. The best part of all of this, and not to completely steal from RJ City, the Satnam Singh and Leo Rush one-off, okay, give me that on Collision because I actually need to see that. Leo Rush is so fun with those fucking opponents like that, so.
100%. He's like, he's a slightly shorter Darby Allin, really. You know what I mean? Like, in
so
that way,
much
like,
fun. Immediately after that, we got the first big announcement of the night, AEW Grand Slam Australia. Taking place February 15th, 2025. They highlighted Kyle Fletcher over and over while they're talking about this. Kyle Fletcher got the pin for his team in the previous match. So,
Fletchy versus Garcia for world title, question mark?
Hey, it very well could be. We know how much they believe in Kyle Fletcher, and we're believers too. So, we've already made a thing
we might
about
be
it.
Kyle Truthers at this point.
Yeah, so. Up next, we had Willow Nightingale and Tomohiro Ishii defeat Chris Statlander and Stokely Hathaway. Okay. Stokely, this was fucking awesome. The reactions to Stokely hitting, like, a spine buster on Ishii is something I don't think I'll ever forget.
You have to imagine he's, like, actually genuinely, like, a trained wrestler that just went the manager
sure
route,
trained,
right?
Like, but it's the idea of...
Or he's got, like, that Tony Schiavone manager bump training, right? Where he and, like, they showed him how to hit a couple moves because they're pretty, you know,
it's
like when
the
wrestler
cat jumps on the wrong counter. And you're like,
exactly.
You're like, going to do something you've never seen happen. And you're like, what the
fuck?
That is
true. That is how I would describe Stokely hitting wrestling offense. It's like the cat that jumps on, like the counter space that's got just enough space for the cat to stand, but just enough for the paws, but nothing else. And the cat's like, where do I go from here? Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Like,
but he was fun. He came out in some fun looking gear. And Willow and Tomo got the win. Of course, now she gets to pick the stipulation for their all out match. Our next big announcement, we had Shivani welcome Tony Khan and Dr. Martha Hart to the stage where they announced.
Thank God.
They were pretty much announcing congrats to the winners of the Hart Cup, just selling home that it was a big deal that they won that and that they're getting their title shots. And that's when they announced AEW New Japan will present Forbidden Door in London on the same date that All In was, August 24th. So, well, I guess August 25th, the day before. It's a holiday in the UK. That's all I know. So,
bank holiday?
Sounds about right. Up next, we had Dustin Rhodes, Sammy Guevara, Katsuyori Shibata, Ross, and Marshall Von Erich defeat Mike Bennett, Matt Taven, Brian Cage, Bishop Khan, and Toa Leona. There's a lot of people.
Have we gone the other way on Brian Cage finally? Like, is he like, he's not one of our guys, but like, we just like him enough. Like, he's enough of a meme at this point. Like, Wardlow, we don't like
Brian
love
Cage
the way Wardlow's
is perfectly
treated.
Fine
but, like,
to me. I don't need him in the main event. I don't need him anywhere, but I
but
can
he chills
in
the mid card, and he's fine with that, clearly. You know what I mean? Like,
but
and that's.
There's unnecessary criticism happening from this match about Brian Cage and Sammy picking the same gear. Who the fuck cares? And they played into it. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, no, that's the kind of thing the two of those guys I could totally see. They didn't even say anything, or they did right before the match. They're like, hey, when we have similar looking gear, people are going to say something about this. Let's just fuck with them a little bit. Like, I could totally, Brian
they
Cage
went after
totally
each other
seemed
in
like,
the match. And like, yes. People are like, oh, how Bush League AEW would have two guys on opposite teams in the same gear. I'm like, think about what you're saying right now. Who fucking cares?
No. Like, really, like, I don't.
But
if this
really
is the
cool.
shit that we fucking are criticizing the show about, the show is not that. It's not got any issues. Like, what the fuck?
Goddamn right. You're goddamn right. It was really cool seeing the Von Erichs out there with Kevin Von Erich walking his, you know, I believe it's his sons out to Wembley. And we've got multiple news stories this week. We'll cover them more next week in our traditional Eat Sleep Elite about just how proud Dustin Rhodes is of working with the Von Erichs and with Sammy. And, you know, Dustin Rhodes is kind of the face of Ring of Honor right now, and he's representing the brand, and this is really cool to see. Again, just another party match, but yeah, I had to point that out. I hope Cage and Sammy get a little match maybe on Collision to settle a who's Wolverine beef or something. I don't know. Just play up to it. After that, we get this Soraya thing where she's interrupting the show. And at first, probably like everyone else, I'm like, they're doing
it's
this on
Seth Rollins, it's gimmick.
Yeah, I'm like, I was a little in shock they were doing this on the pre-show. Now that we've watched the whole show and how tight-paced it was, I forgot to mention that off the top. This was the best-paced AEW pay-per-view I've ever seen. Beginning to end,
yeah, it was on fucking went fuck out.
Yep, it was 4 hours. Very fucking, I mean, I thought it was paced. And I was thinking to myself, holy shit, they're doing this on the pre-show. And that is Jamie Hayter's return. Pre-show or not.
You think about that, though? That's a
fucking boom.
Hear me out. Genius move. It's a YouTube video. Now anyone that wants to see that, they have to go to the YouTube video or buy the pay-per-view. So,
I don't know, it's kind of a smart move. Yeah, no, and I think it didn't hit any different than if it would have 20 minutes later on the pay-per-view. Honestly, that's what we're talking about. I don't think it would have hit any different. But yes,
well, here's how it could have potentially hit different, right? Britt was going to beat Mercedes, or you wanted her to inject her straight into the title scene against Mariah May, right? But
which that just takes away from Mariah's moment.
Correct, and that's supposed to be her Wembley moment, winning in front of, correct me, Mariah is British, right? She is actually from UK, yeah. So in front of her home people, that's supposed to be her moment. Jamie Hayter got that moment, you know what I mean, already in... You know, well, she didn't. I don't think she made it to All In last year, right? I think she was that when she got hurt. Yeah. So, but the idea was going to be her heading into that championship.
18 months.
Tragic loss. So glad to have her back.
Talk about that. How great did she look?
She looked phenomenal. She looked ready to fucking go. She looked hungry. She looked. I mean, is it sexist for me to say she looked kind of bad? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know, like,
I don't know.
You know, like she's looking bad. Looking bad-y, you know,
she
like
great.
So.
And this is one of those things, too. This was the top dog when she left. All the new wrestlers are two champions. Mercedes and Mariah were not in this company.
When she left, we were complaining that she was out there having matches with Tony Storm and various others.
She's the men look bad. Bangers with Emi Sakura on Rampage.
Yeah, she was making the men look bad by having more consistently good wrestling matches every other week on TV than they were. Not that there wasn't good wrestling happening, but it was making the men have to, like, step up a little bit almost. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
this is an S-tier wrestler back at the top of the division, injecting into a division that I believe is truly the best it's ever been. And it's seemingly only getting better when you have people like Jamie Hayter returning.
I really hope that she is, like, going to get, like, I hope that she doesn't get locked down with the Soraya thing for a while. While, don't get it twisted, the last long-term wrestling feud we had in the women's division, I think I agree with, was it Soraya or who was it on the
let's get panel? It with Deonna Purrazzo.
Was it Mercedes? One of them said that the women's division is better in the scrum than they said in the scrum was better than the men's division storyline wise. And I think I agree with them. I think their storylines have been more consistent.
Yep, that was Mercedes.
I couldn't remember which one of them said. I knew there was three women on the panel. I know Mariah kind of just read like a predetermined thing. And who else is on there? I just meant it. But anyway, they all, you know, had different angles, so I couldn't remember who said what, but either way, I agree with that. I think their storylines are better, so I would be down with that is basically what I'm getting at. I'd be cool with them doing a long-term storyline, but I would really, really rather her get back into the world title scene sooner rather than later. She doesn't need to win it right away.
No, of course not.
But she could definitely cool. Chase. The chase with her can be the most exciting thing in this company right now. You know what I mean?
Anyone like, she wrestles, it's going to be exciting now because we're looking forward to that next match. So, okay, and then we do our entrances for the ladder match. We kick off All In. They're all
who
out
the
there.
Fuck was the guy with the flag? I want to know. Hear me out. Conspiracy theory. It's somebody from the WWE, and that's why they had to wear a mask. Who would be close enough for the House of Black's entrance?
I don't know. I have no idea.
So there was a guy when they first cut. So they didn't do the thing they normally do because obviously they're in Wembley and it's the middle of the day. So they can't do the.
I mean, hey, if we want to go like rogue conspiracy, it could be Rhea Ripley.
Is she tight with like Malachi and all them?
Well, she's married to Buddy.
Well, that's right. It could be her. That would be actually, how awesome would that be? Like Tony
maybe
says, okay,
Julia Hart. I don't know.
But you got to cover her up completely so they don't know. See, that would be cool. That's basically what I was getting at. Who could be in that spot? Because there's, you know, that I thought it was going to be Malachi, like he was going to take the mask off and show like his face or something.
Yeah, it's but, probably like, just someone that they're friends with.
No, it's probably just wrestling. Somebody from. Let's be honest, it's probably just somebody, another wrestler that didn't have a spot on the show or something, and they were like, "Hey, just go out there and stand," or they were like, "Hey, we need someone to go out and be skull guy with flag for House of Black. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, I'll do it, you know?
Yeah. But well, anyways, we kick off with our London ladder match where we have new champions, and it's the Pac Pool Combat Club. I personally hope Pac just gets inducted into the Blackpool Combat Club.
Is that what we think? We mentioned you, like, what, 2 years ago now?
Yeah, but they keep saying Blackpool plus Pac, so we'll see. They defeated the Patriarchy, the Bang Bang Gang, and the House of Black, of course. Big note here for me. I thought Nick Wayne was going crazy. I thought he took advantage of every single opportunity.
Think about when was the last time he like really consistently wrestled? This guy's just happy to be on a pay-per-view, probably. Like,
Nick Wayne's wrestling.
I made the biggest show of the year, and he didn't have to do shit. You know what I mean? Like,
yep. Our splash moments with Buddy were always incredible. And I thought this was just a fun little match. You know, like, I kind of thought
that was unexpected. Probably the difference between like a Christian and a Chris Jericho to me. No offense to Chris Jericho, but I think Jericho has acknowledged this in the past on his podcast. When you're in like his vicinity, just being in his vicinity is pretty much all you're getting from it. When you're in Christian's vicinity, you actually do gain something. I think this is genuine proof that, not that the Chris Jericho couldn't be, but look at where the two spots are on the card, right? You have the FTW Championship, which for all intents and purposes is a championship in AEW, but is below every other championship, let's be honest, right? You have this match, which the Trios Championship are obviously the lowest tag championship, right? But that doesn't really mean much.
I'm going to say they're equal at this point.
That's, to be fair, they have kind of dragged the tag titles through the mud recently, so that's not crazy. And I do think they're having equally good matches, so I think that's fair. I think the tag team wrestling never like missed quality-wise on either division. It was just always the lack of content. But anyway, to get back to where I was going with this, I think the fact that that Nick Wayne is on the biggest show of the year as a champion walking in, you know what I mean? I mean, that's, if you just told me that when he first joined with Christian Cage, I'd have been like, that makes sense, but I don't know how we're going to get there, because right now Christian's not even in title contention. He just lost the TNT championship not long before that, I think, you know, actually he hadn't won it yet, but like,
yeah,
he was about to lose it.
He didn't touch any gold yet.
Yeah, no, I mean, he might have had a title match or something.
Such a great job. This to me was a fun opener. It was a scramble, if you will, right? And Killswitch, of course. Killswitch,
I mean, aren't ladder matches like kind of always a scramble because of the nature of the match? Like, because you always have to.
I think normally they would be, but I think with the 12 people, it felt just a little bit extra.
I could see that. There was definitely some urgency to like the 4-way ladder match where the Hardys came back at WrestleMania because of there being a 4-team.
There's just a little bit too many people, but they still made it work because it's fucking AEW. And they, for some reason, these bullshit, you know, matches like this, I seem to always love them. So,
well, with the way that this can work, and I think this is why, if you're going to do these quadruple, triple, trios matches, whatever you want to call them, like, you should do it with a stipulation of some kind, because it just makes it easier to manage. Because the thing that's unspoken about every stipulation multiple team matches is that it's going to be Tornado, and that allows everyone to do something whatever, you know what I mean? Whereas if you do like a normal triple trios match, it's just a third team on the apron, and now there's like 9 bodies around the ring, and it's super confusing. And if you got another team, it's fucking 12. And like you said, like, so it's just like, you know, it is what it is. And I've talked about how I hate those tag rules where you can tag out as another team. Like, why would you ever do that? I mean, I know you might lose, but you also won't win now. So what? Anyway, but you know, but it works for here. Do we care? Okay. So should this have been an actual team? And I mean, who would it have been? Right. But like, should it have been?
Hold on. I can answer that for you. This was supposed to be Death Triangle. They were supposed to win. They're not a company anymore. So the
Penta says that we're still with AEW. Just kidding, we're not actually.
Just kidding, we don't want that title at Wembley because we're going to NXT, baby.
So is that confirmed then? Are they gone? Like,
I based on this happening, yeah.
Yeah, right. Their tag team partner just won a trios title without
pretty
them.
Much everyone that this
I know that was basically believed, but I also remember the Penta statement, so you know, I don't know why.
That's why this even feels a little random, because I think the plan was always still make it a surprise when they show up. So no, but this was always for Pac to get his Wembley moment, and maybe his Wembley moment in 2 years will be for the world title, right? Let's get into this title reign. It wasn't anything too crazy. They held the title for 37 days. It was basically just a Collision fun title. They never defended it, but they kind of ran it down on Collision. It was a good title reign.
It was better than, I mean, sucked that we lost Jay White, you know what I mean? Like, just randomly to injury, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Oh, how they got the title, I fucking hate it. But for what the title was, perfectly fine.
But I expect that when Jay White is back, that whoever is champion at the time, they're going to challenge. Because the Bang Bang Gang are still over. Like, the Bang Bang Gang hit, like, a point of over where, like, even changing their music to, like, what at the time we weren't, like, super on board with, but now it's become, like, their iconic music, you know? Like, I think if once he's back, I think they're over enough. They have to do something with them because,
yeah.
I mean, even with Juice, you can still do stuff for now. Like, they did that before when Jay was hurt, you know what I mean? So, or, you know. Like,
so, also, Pac is the first person to win the Trios titles twice with another team. The Elite, of course, have held it twice on their own. But Pac is the first person himself to win it twice with two different teams. So, and I got to tell you, with these guys as champions, again, I hope it ends up just becoming Blackpool Combat Club. That's a me thing. I think we need to add someone to that group anyways.
If you think about it, he's not from Blackpool, right? He's from Newcastle, well, right?
But Blackpool's from fucking Regal.
Right, that's Regal, right? But yeah. I could see now you could, all you'd have to do is be like, he could say, like, why me and Regal, you never really got along. He didn't give me, he gave me an opportunity in NXT, but he never really thought I was his guy, you know?
He feels like he fits.
But then, you know how you do it? We had a feud between Pac, well, not a feud, but like a potential feud between Pac and Claudio, right? So we need to address that if he's going to work with them, right? I'm surprised they didn't address it in the match, you know what I mean? Because they did just wrestle recently, and it's pretty intense. There's opportunity to tell a story there. I trust AEW to not just have this be a random team and then have them drop it on like a random Dynamite or something like that. They could drop it at like a Grand Slam or something. Or what's the show where Darby's like getting his title shot at?
We got All Out and then Wrestle Dream.
So those are the two opportunity potentials.
But yes, Grand Slam is before Wrestle Dream.
Or Grand Slam. So those are the three possible chances.
I fully expect these Trios titles to be defended a lot with these guys. They
should be on all three of those shows, obviously.
We have fighting champions here. So jumping into the next one, we have our women's title match, which has been the longest story out of any of the programs.
Because it's 2 weeks from now, I'm going to have to fucking work the week of All Out as well. Fuck me.
It's Saturday. They're all Saturdays.
Oh, yeah, we're good.
Yeah, remember, they're all like, Saturdays.
Bag unfumbled. All right, I'm...
It's all good. So this is our longest story that we've had, the women's championship match. This is a 9 months in the making. This was pitched to Mariah before she joined the company.
Would it be too far to say maybe the best long-term storytelling in the history of AEW?
That gets tricky, because if you consider Hangman's ascent to the title,
I didn't see that, though. That's the thing. The first pay-per-view I watched is when he won the title. So, like, it's hard for me to say, you know, like.
But I would have, I mean, for the women's, we're talking about a women's division that would get stories for 3 weeks and that was it. This is by far, in my opinion, the best story that the women's division had.
That would have four stories going on and get two fucking segments in a week, you know, like.
Yeah. But this was the pitch to Mariah and flawless execution. Now, since the heel turn, some of the promos to me, and I think you would agree, we've talked about on the show, they've been a little, you know, they haven't been on hits since the heel turn itself. But what matters is, how is she going to do during the match? Well, we get to the match. It's vicious. It was bad. She's slapping her own mother at ringside.
That was a little far, but I mean, I get it, you know? Like,
but it fits, and then she's kissing Nigel, which...
Hey, yo. Isn't Nigel married? What the fuck?
Yeah, he's with Anne's friend. So
yeah, what the hell, man? Yeah. John Campia needs to say something about that on the show. What the fuck?
Yeah,
bro, we need to see John Campia in London for an AEW show.
Speaking of that, John went live yesterday.
Yeah,
and he opens his show with a big thing talking about Nigel.
Oh, did you talk about him wrestling?
Yeah,
he must have told him. I bet, because
he did an open mic. It sounds like John watched the show. So
I bet he watches AEW occasionally. I bet if he knows Nigel's going to be on the show, he watches. You know, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
He posted a really cool Instagram post about it. It's just like when worlds collide. I could never imagine these two things colliding, and yet it was really neat. But anyways, I thought Mariah May here and Toni Storm, they had a fucking awesome match. It was fully in character. What did you think of the match and Mariah finally getting her ascension? And we'll talk about Toni's title reign.
I think it was the moment that, I think it's funny, like, how long ago, do you know exactly, because I'm sure, I didn't know if you looked this up or not, do you know when Toni Storm and Mariah Wayne became a thing? Like, how long ago that was?
I mean, exactly. Mariah joined the company about 9 months ago on the dot.
And that, and from jump, she was already associated with, so we can just say that's when it started.
That was the plan, was for her to take the title at Wembley.
I remember you saying that to me. Yeah, obviously, all the way back then, that's when they planned her to take the title at Wembley was then, right? So that is a long time. If you think about the journey we went on to get there, and then ending it with this match. And if you think about it, they didn't touch in a match in that entire time. You know what I mean? And so it's like, this was just like one of those things that like, so WWE can be like, yeah, we booked fucking 2 years of a championship reign. And they can say they did that, right? Actually, was it longer than that? How long was Roman's title reign? 4 years, right? They booked a 4-year title reign, right? And that took planning and execution, but not every bit of it was great, right? There were times throughout when people were really bored of it, right? I don't think there was a single part of the story other than the few promos that got a little wonky, right? Where we were like, God, I just want this to be over. You know what I mean? Like, this was actually well-paced, good storytelling. And something that, what is the guy from Warner Brothers that does the movie thing that they have do the announcements for Tony and stuff like that? Anyway, you know who I'm talking about, the movie guy.
I can't even think about who.
You know who I'm talking about? The guy that was like, he came out and interviewed her. Because, like, he's associated Turner Classic Broadcasting.
Ben something, yeah.
That guy. He called this, like, cinema at the beginning. Or someone mentioned that they were going to do cinema, basically, instead of wrestling here, right? Might have been Tony Storm in the promo package. But anyway, like, which I think, I mean, you know, obviously I'm not going to be else fucking all on guard and say, oh, this was cinema, not real. But I feel like, if that's what they were going for, I definitely felt that, you know what I mean? This story felt the most cinematic out of the AEW stories that we had going on, certainly.
Yeah, it really did.
Tony did have a nice entrance and gear. I was kind of hoping, like, you know, like, where was it she did the Statue of Liberty gear out? That was, like, the peak of Timeless Tony Storm to me in terms of, like, gear, gimmick, and moment.
It must have been at, like, some type of New York show.
That sounds right. Either way, like, I was expecting her to go that way with this. It was a lot more reserved, and I understand why she did that, but, like, I don't know. Not to say that there weren't, but there were some matches where I was like, oh, okay, I was expecting a little bit more pomp, you know what I mean? Like, this felt like the match where it would be. Maybe if I went back and rewatched, I would have a different take, but it was just so early in the show, and I was so ready for things to get going, and I was so, this is one of the ones I've been waiting to pay off for so long, you know, like, really, really great, happy for Mariah. Really kind of terrified for her promo that she's going to have to cut on Wednesday, though, because who knows what's going to happen there, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk about Toni Storm's title reign. So this was her third title reign. She is the second longest combined days. Of course, 13 days behind Hikaru Shida still. She's at 423 and Shida's at 436. This was a 281-day title reign. So the third longest behind Shida, Baker, and now this one. And the title reign itself, on the surface, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. She defeated Hikaru Shida at Full Gear 2023. She then defeated her title defenses, of course, being she took on Sky Blue, defeated her on a Dynamite. At World's End last year, she defeated Riho. At Revolution this year, she defeated Deonna Purrazzo, and that was another really fun story. At Dynasty, she defeated Thunder Rosa. Double or Nothing, she defeated Serena Deeb. And then Forbidden Door, probably my favorite story of all of them, was the Mina Shirakawa story. And then Dynamite last week. Well, this week she defeated Saraya. So really good title defenses. All played well with the character. I thought this was overall just a really, really strong title reign. And this thing kind of was hot potato for a little bit after Jamie Hayter dropped it due to injury. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing you have to give credit to Toni Storm the most for was she was known for her first title reign as being this one thing. And it was just basically like sort of like the anchor of the AEW women's division in a post-Jamie Hayter world, right? And then like it kind of all fell apart a little bit. Like the women's division just kind of scattered again, you know, like it had in the times when there wasn't like a centralized figure. Because as good as Toni Storm was, nobody was able to be the fucking everything that Jamie Hayter was when she was on top of the division. It's just, I don't know how Jamie juggled all that, but she was leading. She was also having insane matches and pushing everyone, the men and the women both, to have great matches. And she was also helping to like keep, I think just because of how good she was, Tony couldn't help but like have a little extra spot on the card for the women at the time. You know what I mean? And I don't think that's changed. I think it's gotten even better for them since because of the amount of talent that he's brought in. But, you know, She filled that hole with this incredible character that on paper sounds insane and really is insane, but only works because it's wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, if this wasn't wrestling, this would be insane. but it is wrestling, so it works. And Toni Storm milked the shit out of it, you know, like, and it's worked as best as it can. I do think that the next time that we see her, she needs to be doing something different, though. I think
she's
this
a little tuned to it. She can tune Timeless Toni Storm up.
I mean, I maybe people will say that we haven't seen the final act of this, right? And maybe that's the case. But I just, there's part of me that wants to see the other Toni Storm back again, because it's been so long, you know, like, so. And this, I feel like if we continue to do it, it doesn't need a championship, but like, I'm just, you know, trying to think, would I want to see this against like a random person in the division right now? Like, maybe, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, see where the story takes us, right? See where we know we'll get a good match out of her, like we do every time. Up next, we jumped into Hook defeating Chris Jericho for the FTW title match. This was more or less a handicap match, and this was all just Hook proving himself that he can beat Jericho. Fun little Fozzy concert. Hi, guys! And yeah, it's just okay.
I won't lie. Again, Jericho knows how to work everybody, including me, and when he hit the hi guys, I am the learning tree, and then they started fucking music, actual live music, I was like,
yep.
This motherfucker, when he came up with this gimmick, was thinking about Wembley. I know it. You know what I mean? Like,
He was. And he put over Hook, like he loves Chris. Everyone can say what they want about Chris Jericho.
By the way, is this the first time? This can't be the first time he's had Fozzy come out and do his entrance with him, right? He has to have done that a couple times before.
He did it at Wembley last year.
Okay, so he's saving it for bigger shows. That makes sense. You know what I mean?
He said every time he plays at Wembley, he is going to use Fozzy live. That's
okay,
a thing
well,
that he can do, and he's, you know, he's got the right to do that.
100%. That's his band.
This match was just, you know, it was fine. It's not a match I'm going to remember from
this
one.
No, this was your cool down after that crazy women's match.
Hook is a 3-time champ. He's now won the title at All In twice.
So I saw some people saying that they thought that Hook needed this moment to legitimize himself as like a top star, right? Like, and I think what I said to you as he came out to this match was he had an aura, right? Like as they were doing like the Taz music throwback, right? Everyone started like flipping out and the crowd was going nuts. And I started getting like a little goosebumpy, right? Do you think he achieved that level of star yet from this match, from this win, from becoming FTW champion again? Or do we still have work to do with Hook? Because I'm curious what your answer is to this.
I'll say this. I think the Samoa Joe thing brought Hook up to a level he wasn't previously at. I don't think this elevated that level. I do think Hook is on our kind of a Jack Perry level where he can easily hold any belt in this company. And if he gets a good program for the top belt, I could see it working. But
so he just needs to actually fist fight Chris Jericho backstage and then he'll be good.
Beating Chris Jericho at All In is going to be something you can use on your resume for the rest of your fucking career. He beat the first AEW World Champion. It's that simple. You know?
Shit, Will still talks about it.
Yeah. And I got no problems with that. I still think, for what's made Hook, I'm still going back to the Samoa Joe match. I don't think this elevated more than that did. What do you think?
Well, I wasn't really saying. I guess my quote was more to, like, this, like, add, yeah. I guess
add to the
kind of misframed it a little bit. Like, the way they were framing it was, like,
I mean, I think how they shot him with the camera in the back was something that we need to do with him from now on.
Like maybe, because it was MJF that said it. And like, I wonder if Max knew they were going to do something like that. Cause as much shit as Max gives other wrestlers, right? I seriously doubt he's the like odd man out in the locker room. Like he says he is, you know what I mean? So I wouldn't be surprised if he knew something like that. Or I could also see him being, that odd man out in the locker room, but still having friends like Hook being one of them. I could see that. Cause you know, they're both rich kids. Just keep it at a buck, you know what I mean? But, God, can you imagine? There's got to be a group of friends in the back, right? That's like Jack Perry, MJF. Who was it I just said? Fucking, we're talking about right now? Hook.
Sure, all those AEW originals.
And Nick Wayne. Nick Wayne. Because I don't know how rich Buddy Wayne was, but the fact that he gets into AEW and is friends with guys like Darby Allin and was wrestling in places. I'm assuming Buddy Wayne made some decent money, you know what I mean? Like, with his wrestling school. So, maybe not like rich, but like rich enough to be like a good wrestler at like 17, you know what I mean? Like, so, like Young Bucks style, you know, like, and then the Young Bucks, I bet that's the group, I bet that's literally the group of rich kid friends in AEW. I bet they have other friends, but I bet there's, like, a fucking occasionally, like, a cabal of the fucking rich people meeting at AEW, you know what I mean, like, and then CM Punk walks in and says, I'm one Bill Phil, and I control everything, and then fights the Young Bucks, and, you know, he then super kicks their door down, you know, but it's a super duper kick, because it's CM Punk.
There you go. Jericho held this title for 126 days. It was the For the World Championship under him. He defeated Hook at Dynasty. His challengers for the title included Katsuyori Shibata on a Dynamite. He then defeated Hook and Katsuyori Shibata at Double or Nothing. He then defeated Minoru Suzuki on a Dynamite and then lost the title here. All in this, he's in my opinion, brought up both Brian Keith and Big Bill, because holy shit, that Big Bill.
Now, I gotta disagree on the Big Bill thing. Big Bill was a fucking world champion, dude.
Yes, he was an AEW Tag Team Champion. Well, that's not world champion, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. Tell that to every tag team. Tell that to fucking FTR, dude. That's a world tag team championship.
World tag team, sure, but when tag you say team world wrestling champion, is like, as shit, important. Did I miss a fucking TNA world title run?
No, that's a world championship. We have to treat it that way. It is the world tag team championship. That's how it's intended to be. It says on the belt, I guarantee, world heavyweight tag team wrestling championship.
Hey, fair enough.
Or something to that effect, anyway.
This
is a world championship.
Cardiff is the peak of Big Bill's career, and if they can build upon this. If they can build upon that,
surely that can't be when you've won a top championship. Because, like, again, I know you don't consider it clearly, but the tag team championship is considered a top champ. It is the top of the tag team.
Dude, that title reign was so bad. Ricky Starks isn't in the company anymore.
I'd say Ricky Starks is probably not in the company anymore because of CM Punk more than anything, right? Like, that seems like, if I had to guess, it's because he's, like, tight with people that are in WWE right now more than it's got to do with, like, and the fact that AEW, let's be honest, let me just say, because I got to say this because you just said that, and it made me, we got to remember that we complained for how long about this company not ever, other than that, winning the tag team titles, and even when he had the tag team titles, never doing anything with the guy. So it's really not like...
Yeah, I mean, he had a storyline for a whole year, and just, it was supposed to end with him beating CM Punk for that real world title.
And both that title and Punk were gone before the match ever happened.
Punk got himself fired, and it left Ricky Starks in limbo. They beat FTR on a random collision and have...
Bro, how pissed do you think FTR was... Or FTR. Well, FTR were probably pissed too, but how pissed do you think Ricky Starks was backstage at Brawl In when he found out that Punk got into another fight with Jack Perry? And he's just think he's watching his career just slip away, you know, like.
He had to be very upset.
You know?
Yeah. Anyways, we'll move along here. What do we have next? The World Tag Team title three-way match where we had the Young Bucks defeat FTR and the Acclaimed.
Forget what we both had in this. What do you remember what we had in our predictions for this?
I think I had the Acclaimed and you had FTR. Oh. We were both wrong.
It could have gone any of the three ways, honestly, yeah. Because, like, this was, like. Let's be honest, this felt like they just threw FTR in because Young Bucks vs. Acclaimed wasn't as hot as they wanted it to be.
And the match, I don't think, hit the levels it should have with the people involved. But it was fine. It was accessible. It was a good wrestling match.
What this ended up doing ultimately was setting up for Grizzled Young Vets vs. Young Bucks, which should be really good, you know?
Yes, and we finally have new blood in the tag division. Of course, being Drake and Gibson. So
they've kind of been flirting with AEW for a while. They've been on a few different randoms. Random shows like Ring of Honor and stuff like that, you know? I think they were on like a random Rampage or some shit like that, you know? And we were like, oh, they're fine.
I really hope that the Bucks defend their titles a little more because this...
Doubtful?
...is the lowest it's ever been.
Doubtful,
and the big
but
reason is the infrequent defenses. They should defend these things at all
hours. You say that until we get a tag team casino gauntlet match for the championship.
And it might be the greatest thing we've ever seen if they do that. That sounds incredible.
It actually would be pretty crazy. Didn't they do a tag team casino battle royale once, which actually worked way better than you would think? Like,
yeah,
because it's just an extra body, and your team can be eliminated. I think the only thing they did was silly was your team can be eliminated if one person gets eliminated. But if they just do that, it's like a single elimination per person or just one person per team type beat, you know, then they could make it work for sure. You know what I mean? Like,
this was fine. So, Grizzled Young Vets arrive, inject new blood. So. Yeah, we'll see where that goes.
This is the three most over teams in the company, probably, right? Like, in a match. So, I mean, you couldn't have... I like the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and Fire Gear by the Young Bucks. I thought that was pretty cool. The best spot in the match is Max Caster hitting both a Shatter Machine and, an EVP trigger.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun. You know, he probably loved that.
Taz's reaction of, if he's an EVP, I'm not taking orders from freaking Caster.
It's like, all
right. Fair enough, Taz.
Yeah, I wouldn't take orders from that guy either.
Up next, we had AEW's greatest creation that they've done to wrestling, the Casino Gauntlet match. We knew the entrant, the first man, Orange Cassidy. He gets a fun Wembley entrance.
Fucking teleported in, bro. Orange Cassidy has the power of teleportation. We're just saying that now. That's canon.
I honestly, if there was one person,
yeah, I know. It was him. That guy doesn't get on planes. No shot. No way.
Hell no. Okada came out second. He was having some fun with OC. They had some fun little mixes. And out comes Nigel McGuinness at three to an Oasis tune.
Dude, this almost had like a Royal Rumble vibe to it because
that's
of the fucking
what the gauntlet
numbers.
Does. Yes, it does. It has that unexpected, like, it's a fucking genius. They're 3 for 3 with this match. They're literally 3 for 3.
This is, I think, somehow a match that I don't think this would get old if they kept doing it literally like every other week. Like, I feel like this is so exciting, and the amount of, you know why this works so well, Charlie? Because of how deep this roster is. Like, yes. Literally anybody could be in this match, and there's, like, almost nobody that would be bad. And even if you throw a couple of shitters in there, like they do, like, with your New Japan Battle Royals and stuff, you know, like, it still wouldn't, you know, it's true! Like, over-the-top rope matches, or, like, if they even do those, or, like, elimination matches, or, like, eight-team tag matches where there's, like, 42 people in the ring, and, like, 14 of them are over the age of 50, yeah, like, you know, like... Yeah.
Nigel got a massive reaction. He looked incredible shape, as was popping me all match. Does this mean I work Saturdays?
Yeah.
Tony Schiavone's like, I'll see you in South Dakota there, buddy. Like, I'm not working the freaking Saturday.
Oh, I do. Okay, so I guess my question to you with regard to Nigel, does this mean we get a Nigel run? I mean...
It's hard to... I don't know about a run. I think this opens the door to legit matches, though. He looked perfectly fine. He looked good.
Dude, he looked fucking...
He's in great shape.
He didn't
Holy
look...
Shit.
He missed a beat.
No, he had fun, too.
Dude, you know what the best part of that, too, was? When him and fucking... Dude, him wrestling against Zack Sabre Jr. That is... My mind was breaking seeing that happen. I couldn't compute it, dude. Mm-hmm. Like...
Well, yep. Well, before Sabre, we had Kyle O'Reilly enter, and we had our conglomeration... What's that?
Is it fucking Kyle?
Oh, fucking Kyle. And we had our conglomeration tag working really nicely here, I thought. And Kyle and Nigel had some good one-offs there. Slumdog Millionaire by Orange Cassidy was really nice looking. And then we got the G1 Climax winner, Zack Sabre Jr. hit the ring, and just like you, he had his little face-off with Okada, and then he goes into Nigel McGuinness, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I never knew I needed this match. But now that it's in my face, I can't think of anything else I want more. Taz was
like,
Taz
we have to get
so
that
good.
Match purely, surely at least. Like, say like AEW is like too scared to have him do like an actual series of matches, right? Like maybe they do the Bryan match,
Dome at Dynasty, or whatever the fuck that pay per view is called.
Yeah,
on
like
the 3rd.
That one, and then before then you can run a match between him and Bryan on like a Dynamite or something like that. You know what I mean? Like for the fucking views.
Nah,
if Bryan's not done, by the
it
way,
it has to be on Collision for the sickos.
That would be
true. Make the rules.
That would also put some odds on Collision.
Roddy entered, and the thing I wrote here was, I couldn't believe how amazing the talent is in the ring is. And
how have we not done Robbie versus Roddy in this match? Why wasn't he? He's working with them right now.
Yeah, he'll get booked for that.
If it had been five more minutes, you know what I mean? Like,
he might have been the next one up.
We'll say Luchasaurus beat his ass.
No, when Roddy was in the ring, and you know, this match is for an AEW world title shot. I was thinking, it sounds like they're going to treat it like a Money in the Bank thing again, like the previous, the one that...
Like when MJF won, yeah, that's right. So, and...
We'll have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, so...
Because it is Luchasaurus
ends up... Yeah, Luchasaurus ends up...
But I want to throw this out there. With Roderick Strong, and this being for the world title, the championship opportunity, I think we're at a point now in the company where we can get some of these smaller world title runs. And I think Roderick Strong, if we're on our Samoa Joe type of championship runs, because I think that's what Danielson's going to have, I think Roderick Strong is one we could definitely get in there. I think he's won over AEW more and more since he's been here. Now, I know his first title reign in the company wasn't great, but I don't think that was all his fault. I think he kind of got lost in the booking. That won't happen with a fucking world title, with a world championship. But I don't know. I think Roderick Strong,
I think
that's
tough for him because he's stuck with like kind of a shit gimmick right now with the Undisputed Kingdom because Adam Cole's been so absent. You know what I mean? Like, so like, you know.
But he's legit enough where he can break out of it in a heartbeat, just like Joe with War Joe. All it takes is a fucking snap of the fingers and everyone forgets it happened. So
yeah, so Luchasaurus rigs this for Christian Cage. Which, I mean, that's fine. That's the result. Is Luchasaurus ever going to leave Christian Cage? Probably not, right? Like,
they're saving that. They're going to save that. We had Mark Briscoe in there. Really fun stuff with Zack Sabre Jr. We had Jeff Jarrett hit his, the conglomeration, of course, was doing some fun trio stuff here. Hangman enters. My God. Big Hangman stuff. He was going crazy.
Hanger had the heat, brother.
Jeff Jarrett got his Wembley moment. Some of the best punches. And dude, there was a fucking punch he hit on Roderick Strong. Roddy is so fucking, he is so underrated.
Roddy.
And then out at number 10 to a massive pop, his debut in AEW, we had Ricochet. And he looked so damn good. Ricochet fits like a glove in AEW. He really does. And if there was a fucking second, Ricochet is going to remind people who he is in this company. And you know this. I've been a fucking Ricochet fan since he is the reason I got into independent wrestling. It's because of Ricochet. I found out who the Young Bucks were and found out who Kenny Omega was because he was my catalyst to New Japan Pro Wrestling. He was the reason I bought PWG DVDs and then learned about these other wrestlers. Mr. Two-Time, you name it. I thought he had an incredible tag. When he went to NXT, they weren't using him how I thought they would. After a while, he ends up getting the tag team with Malakai Black. I thought that was good in itself. What I'm trying to say is, I'm not going to be surprised if in 12 months, people are looking back on what the fuck happened with Ricochet, just like they were with Swerve. And I'm just saying, I think he's that good. And I think he will survive in the AEW singles division. I don't know. How do you feel about Ricochet showing up? How do you think he looked? And then, yeah, we had the ending with Christian and Luchasaurus right after that. Ending was whatever. Shocking winner. I did not expect Christian to win this match, but...
Yeah, so I'm on, like, the opposite end. Like, not that I didn't like it or anything like that, but I just don't... I have no real concept of Ricochet. I only was watching wrestling while he was in WWE for, like, a very short period of time. Like... And in the period of time that we were watching, that he was still, when he had been first brought up with, wasn't he tagged with like Malakai, known as Aleister Black at the time, and like a tag team or something like that when he first got brought up or something
and
like
his
that?
His best singles feud, everything he did that was on the best level was in NXT. The Velveteen Dream singles feud, for example.
I think we watched some of his matches in NXT, I want to say, and I don't remember much about them because I remember really liking them, but I just don't remember. I remember from the Velveteen feud, I remember him jumping out of the ring like and landing right in front of Velveteen. That's the one thing I remember and being like, okay, this guy is cool. So I guess I do remember him a little bit. So I remember how good his matches can be. I just want to see him wrestle Will again because I never watched that match back in the day. Like I watched 15, clips
that was
from
the
it.
Match that broke the internet.
I watched
the first time
I've
ever seen that for wrestling.
I watched clips from it, and I'd seen the screenshot of them both like levitating in midair upside down, you know what I mean? Which is a pretty incredible image, you know what I mean? But I just want to see what they would do now with the way that their styles have both changed. Because Ricochet isn't the same wrestler he was then, I guarantee you, and nor is Will. We know for a fact
he
wasn't.
Ricochet was fucking nerfed.
He already looked insane in this. He already looked way crazier in this, and I wasn't expecting it to be that fucking instant, Charlie, but as soon as he's out of the WWE, he's instantly going and doing everything crazy again. So there must have been somebody over there telling him to take it easy, you know what I mean? Like,
is the only
he's like,
wrestler-
no, I want to be fucking Ricochet. Like,
absolutely. And just for any, I was at the NXT show when him and Malakai won the Dusty Rhodes Classic, and it's things like that I was rooting so hard for him. And I was so sad that he was turned into just another guy from Vince.
No, it's like they viewed him as a lower mid-card guy. And I don't understand how you get that with a guy that's as fucking exciting to watch as him. And my God, you know what
the
match?
Single reason
you
I
know what
to
match they need to have,
wrestling.
Charlie? It's a risky match, but you know what? It can make his career. You need to have this guy face fucking Hologram.
That's the one. You let that main event of fucking Collision for 25 minutes and watch what happens. I mean, look, they're already doing the Kyle Fletcher match. That's his first match.
And certainly he needs to face Dante. He needs to face Will. He needs to face... Obviously, unfortunately, we're not going to get the Rey Fénix match now. He needs to face
a good throwback to
Commander. If we can get him against Charlie, if we can somehow pull it with the relationship having Sour, if we can get Vikingo back for one-off match with Ricochet...
I
think that's what's less possible.
We have a chance of AEW signing Vikingo before fucking any of this.
That's fair, actually. We could actually see a scenario. I don't know when his contract is up. I'm sure they have him locked down to some kind of longer-term deal.
I want to see him against people like Danielson, too, while we
100%. That's one people have been saying. I'm not sure what my thoughts are on that, because obviously they're two very different styles. But that's the kind of thing that Brian loves. So if we can get that match, It certainly would elevate him instantly because Brian's world champion right now. So even if it was Eliminator, that's the kind of thing that has helped people like Dante when they're first getting over with the new crowd, you know, to get over.
Well, let's jump into this next match here where we have Will Ospreay defeating MJF. He defeated the Evil to win the AEW International title back.
I called this Lord Willard off the pillar versus Maxwell, the Bastard of America.
Bastard of America, very
fitting. Or you could say, you know, Lord Willard versus God's favorite idiot, you know?
This was just a good time. This
Dude, the Assassin's Creed entrance, like, I gotta gush on that for a second, because Charlie knows how fucking huge of an Assassin's Creed fan I am. Like, it's probably one of my favorite game series of all time. Like, I'm literally in the middle of an Assassin's Creed 2 playthrough right now. For those of you who don't know, the main character of Assassin's Creed 2 is Ezio. The guy that was doing the character that was in the voiceover of the fucking intro. So that was pretty fucking cool. I guess Will's interpretation of this is he's now been inducted into the Assassin's Order within the games. And now he wants his own Assassin's Creed game. So I don't think that's going to happen. I'm down. Assassin's Creed Billy. Let's go. But, you know, I definitely would play it. But even if it's a shit game, I'd still play it just to play as Will Ospreay. Going through fucking the back streets of fucking London, like assassinating fucking, like, I don't know, fucking Tories or something. I don't know. That'd be cool. But anyway.
What'd you think of the match and our return of Daniel Garcia?
Yeah, so Danny
Boy. Has not signed a new contract.
Danny Boy is back. Hopefully he does that soon. I'd like to have Danny Boy be back because he's, you know, one of our boys, you know.
I got
to
imagine it's a good sign he showed up, but.
That's what Tony Khan said at the press conference, allegedly. So the fact that he was there was good for that, you know, potential, which is how it worked with MJF before. Remember, he wasn't re-signed. He hadn't, like, re-signed a new deal, but he also then showed up on a Dynamite. So everyone was like, well, anyway, I thought all the offense and stuff was really well-timed. It was a fun match to watch. The offense built up the drama super well. I think this is MJF going out there again against the same guy he already proved it against once, against Danielson, against people like, you know, that he's faced in the last couple of years. He's kind of just proving he's one of the best wrestlers in the world, I think. Because I think, again, I think a lot of people still look at people like Brian and Swerve, and they think, oh, but those are like your wrestlers, you know what I mean? Like, whereas MJF is your talker. But I think this is, and especially the stuff with Daniel, because you know he's going to take it to his strengths, which is a lot of MJF's anyway. I think if MJF didn't probably dislike the kind of like wrestling fans using insider terms things, he would consider himself a very technical wrestler because he does the submission stuff. He does a lot of classic wrestling maneuvers, which is like not necessarily what Brian does, but like it's sort of within that FTR build, you know, like where they do moves that people don't necessarily do anymore, but they do it in a way that makes it look really, really convincing in a modern wrestling match. I thought the match was incredible. This could be like if somebody really felt this. I'm not sure this is going to land this way for me, but I did write this in my notes. It could be a pay-per-view match of the year contender, potentially.
That's just so hard with the fucking main event being on the show.
This is true. I mean, Bryan Danielson's going to be wrestler of the year, regardless of whether he retires mid-year or not, I think. I think that's going to be super hard to beat. You know what I mean? Like, Will is putting in a good fucking effort, though.
I was about to say, we're having a contender where I don't think I've ever seen it this hard to pick between two people because of how great they're doing. It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. Especially if Bryan retires, it's going to be tough for me to not give it to him because it's going to be my last opportunity to, you know? Like, so, but I mean, if he doesn't retire, it's going to be a lot closer for me because, and when I mean retire, like if he's still working like inconsistent days, like say he drops the championship relatively quickly and he's still wrestling after that, but he's just not wrestling as much, like then I'll still consider that him wrestling. It'll just probably go to Will at that point because of the workload, you know what I mean? Like, but like, at least for me, but like, you know, but this is like, I think this was of a quality that if you really liked this match more than something else, you could say that, you know what I mean? But I don't think it will be that for me, but I think it's in that range of quality, you know. Like I said earlier, I don't think anything missed on this show. I think everything pretty much was good.
Hard agreeing, yeah. I thought this was a really enjoyable match. I liked Will Ospreay getting the victory, of course, using the Tiger Driver. We've had video packages about this move. I've never seen a move be the story like this.
Does he continue to use it after this, do you think? Or do you think
when he dastardly needs to?
Right?
Yeah. Even the little video thing he did with Renee when he talked about the move, I thought it was awesome. It was awesome seeing Daniel. I was hoping we saw him in the gauntlet, and when we didn't, I started getting a little nervous.
He should hit it on Don Callis. That would be fun.
That'd be great. So, yeah, that was, let's talk about MJF's title reign, of course. MJF held this thing for 39 days, and one of the most surprising results I can recall in AEW. I did not imagine that match going the way it did. It was fucking insane. And he defended this thing in Mexico against Tim Plaudio, and in London against Michael Oku a couple weeks ago. So, again, one of the newer AEW rumored signings, of course, in Michael Oku. Hopefully they treat him like a hologram in the sense of roll out video packages, get some hype to him, build to a first match, and just like they did Nick Wayne too, right? Let's because Michael Oku's not a household name, so you got to build to him. And I think they can do it right. All in all, this MJF title reign was fine. I mean, it was 39 days. It was good time. It's one of the stronger title reigns that this one. That's not true.
I wish so many people hadn't asked MJF about fucking Michael Oku, dude, because I already knew that was going to be a spot. You know what I mean? Like, I just felt like I was anticipating there being a moment where it was Michael Oku, but I think it being Daniel Garcia, I think that's why they, I wish they hadn't done that though, because there was part of me that was like, should Michael Oku have been involved in some way, like directly? Like, probably not. But you know, it would have been cool if he just showed up on a Dynamite or something to fuck with MJF, you know?
Yeah, that would have been neat.
Ooh, maybe you could do that in the Daniel Garcia thing. Maybe that's how you debut Oku. Maybe Daniel Garcia's getting beat down. Ooh.
Hey.
Did I just book it? Nah, probably not, but that'd be cool.
Pretty intriguing.
Something like that. But do you think video packages, what do you think would be in that? Do you think, I mean, RevPro would definitely give them the footage. Do you think stuff 100%. Like him versus MJF, yep. Him versus Will from last
make
year?
Make it a spectacle for when he debuts.
I wish Will didn't have a championship because I'd throw him against Will. You know what I mean? They'd love to do that. Throw him against somebody you know they can get a good match out of, but you just can't do that because Will is like, and everyone wants to see that match run back too. You know what I mean? So we'll get there eventually. I think we'll get there with Ricochet eventually, you know? It's. Lord Willard has so many people he could face. I mean, think about the people he's faced so far. There's only so many more people that he could face. You know what I mean? Like, and it's, God, we still have to run back him versus Orange Cassidy, man. Like that, he's got Orange Cassidy's championship. Now he's got Orange Cassidy's championship right now, man. We gotta, you know?
And then we gotta talk about it. Mercedes Moné versus Britt Baker. We covered that title match, right? Yeah, okay. Just make sure I covered the stats. Will is a two-time champion, by the way. Forgot to mention that. Okay, Mercedes had a fucking incredible entrance with her dogs there, with Camille. It all looked pretty good. We had Britt Baker out there. This feud's been a big feud, but I don't know if it's hit the levels that everyone was hoping it would. This was... I could not believe what I was seeing in some of this match.
Can I just say, I think all the fucking shit with Dr. Britt Baker behind the scenes that people have been like running with has been clouding this as part of the reason why people have like a
mixed view on this. And you know what? Some of the times in this match, there was a couple moments where Britt looked fucking lost. And I respect Britt Baker. I think she's awesome. I don't know what the fuck happened. That finish? Dude, she was lost. She could not hit the timings at all, or whatever the fuck was happening. Something was going wrong. That Panama Sunrise, I can't recall a singular moment I've seen a move sandbag that bad. I don't know. It's this. I've seen people calling it the ultimate carry job. They're not wrong. I wasn't sure how people would feel about this match. I checked social media after I watched it because I was telling my sister who was watching it with. I'm like, that was unbelievably clunky. I rewatched the finish this morning. It was as bad as I remembered. I don't know. I don't know what happened. This is Mercedes division now. And yeah, this was her worst match in the company yet. This was the worst Britt Baker match I think I can recall recently. Britt, don't get me wrong. Britt hasn't had any home runs. She's been back, right? And it took Thunder Rosa some time to get back when she was injured for a while, right? But eventually, with the Deonna Purrazzo feud, I thought she found her footing very well, especially by the end of that program. This match did not work for me, unfortunately. Maybe you feel different. How did you think it went?
I don't know if I feel like super differently. I mean, I didn't notice anything. Like, I mean, there were some moves that I didn't think were like spectacularly done. I think I was surprised. The crowd was way more with this than I thought they were going to be following MJF versus Will. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We never really hit that point somehow. And I don't know if like Tony Khan just like, made a deal with like fucking, you know, Methuselah or something, or like fucking, what is the guy's name in Marvel? They always think he's going to show up, Mephisto or something like that. Yeah. And by the way, I'm not implying anything by invoking devil figures. I'm saying like, I'm making the joke of making a deal with the devil by using some like obscure reference to it, right? Like, I don't know if he like, I don't know, did some sort of like wizardry, right? That's not any better. I don't know what the fuck he did, some kind of something, and he has this like magic way of booking these cards in a way where people don't lose energy by the end somehow. And I don't know how he does that, but it could just be. And maybe this is just me, because everybody knows these results are going to go the way that they want them to, and they're actually going to be able to cheer for the moments they want to, unlike at a WWE show, right? That you actually have the anticipation, and it's why the crowd doesn't lose the energy, because they want to actually cheer this stuff even later into a show. Whereas like 4 hours into a WWE show, when two things have not gone the way that you wanted them to, and Roman's beaten his 37th opponent in a row, you're just kind of like, yeah, okay.
Oh, shit.
Or it could also just be that the wrestlers are good enough at the in-ring product that it doesn't really matter. They can always get them going. That's also that possibility as well.
UK crowds, you name it. I mean, look at how they were by their fifth hour on fucking Collision.
I don't know. You see what's going on over in the UK. I don't know if we can get the UK credit for anything right now. Hold on.
Actually, no, I don't really follow their politics. But I just know that their crowds are like fucking incredible, assuming that's what it was. But no, yeah, it's some type of, maybe it's a different type of passion, you know? So, whatever it is, they're fucking cooking, right? Okay.
But yeah, UK wrestling fans are, like, starving for content. That's why they're always so, like, so excited. But, like, I just mean AEW crowds in general, even in the U.S., seem to, like, always have the energy for these shows. I can only remember, like, that second Las Vegas show, and like, or, like, third or fourth Las Vegas show in, like, a few years. That was the only dead show I can ever remember. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. That was when it was like, all right, we got to go somewhere else with this fucking thing.
Yeah.
It's time. But up next, we had Jack Perry defeat Darby Allin in the coffin match.
Jungle Jack.
This is pretty brutal. Darby with the looking like Pinhead with the fucking things on his head. That was pretty good. This is a little quicker than I thought it would be. This was kind of a fast match.
It was almost like those sprint like death matches where like you're just doing a bunch of dangerous spots and hoping for the best, and it's not super long.
Jesus, it was not even 11 minutes. Yeah, this is a little quicker. That's why, again, though, I say the pace of the show. I think if this match dragged, it might have affected the timing of the last match, but who are we kidding? It wouldn't have.
Yeah, they might have just cut some time from this match so they hit their time.
It hit what it needed to, because I think they wanted to hit their post-match thing of Sting showing up as the Young Bucks were about to kill him. Sting said, very notably, he's going to be keeping an eye on AEW and following Darby Allin. Well, if Darby's about to be killed, I guess that's a good time to show up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. yes, I do wish we had waited a little bit longer, because, it was just in January, right? So, like, you know, like, or was it even that long ago? Like,
Revolution in March.
Yeah, so it's only been like, I mean, it's been a while, but it's not, I would have waited like at least over a year. But, you know, that's just because I would have wanted to build it up a little bit more, you know, like, but if he's in a death feud, like, see, the way you would have had to have done that would have been to give Darby some stuff to do before this, but he was just hurt, you know what I mean? So you couldn't really do that. So, you know, like.
This was a tricky booking spot because Darby has the world title match soon, but you don't want him bringing the TNT title match into it.
I mean, you could have him do that. If you do that, it just signals that he's not going to win. You know what I mean? Like,
yep. Which he very well could beat our champion. So, speaking of that, let's jump into it. One of the absolute greatest main events I've ever seen. One of the most emotional wrestling moments I've ever seen. This was truly incredible. And we're talking about Bryan Danielson defeating Swerve Strickland to win the AEW world title.
Let's just talk about the entrances for a second. First of all, the final countdown, obviously, incredible entrance.
The
crowd singing along.
The fucking vibes, man.
Bryan's emotions on his face as he walks down to the ring. The gear that's like a throwback to his gear that he used to wear in WWE. You know what I mean? Like,
all of it.
Slash, like, the gear I'm sure that he used to wear in the Indies, I'm sure, as well. You know what I mean? Like, he has, like, that look. You know, he kind of looked like WWE Bryan Danielson a little bit, too. You know, like. With just like slightly different hair, obviously, because he changed that back so that he could have the bun or whatever like he used to. But like, and then like,
yeah, just what an incredibly memorable match, with Swerve being the ultimate heel, making the kids cry, Danielson fighting through those emotions. He's saying sorry to his family because he's not giving up. He's not going down. He's got him. A just beautiful finish.
One of the greatest cutaways in wrestling history now is Bryan winning the championship, bloodied, smile on his face, looking over at his child, and his child, his tiny baby child boy, is just smiling with glee as his dad has crowned the AEW World Champion.
I don't think we can sell this enough that Bryan Danielson retired 10 years ago. Or that injury happened 10 years ago, right? He retires 2 years later. He has a second chapter of his career. And it's better than most wrestlers' careers, this second chapter alone. This year alone, he has had, just according to some websites, some people, but according to Cage Match, just for an example, and Meltzer's in here too, the three best matches of his entire career this year with Sabre, Ospreay, and now the top match, which I'm curious how this is all going to work, because I actually, for an emotional standpoint, this is the most emotion I've ever felt from one of his matches. I don't know if I'm crowning it higher than the Ospreay match just yet, or the Sabre match. I don't know yet. I can tell you this match made me feel more, and we often like to talk about on our show how wrestling makes us feel. But I just... the fact that we're living in this timeline with Danielson, every day I think about it, and I'm so glad that it's here. I mean, really. It's just so special, and I don't know how much you love Bryan Danielson. How do you feel now that he is AEW World Champion, which he also called the favorite moment of his career?
You know, there's certain linchpin. That's not the right term, but like there's certain I guess a good term, because like, people throw this term around a lot nowadays, would be like core memories. I guess you could associate with this podcast. If you go back to the very beginning, 3 years ago, when we started the show, one of the things that I think brought us together, because I thought it was CM Punk that you were like, no, you have to watch AEW about. And that was part of it, because you knew I was a big boy. CM Punk was my boy, and I wanted to see him wrestle again for years in WWE, right? I booked him on every Chicago show. That we would predict, like, when we were going into another Raw or SmackDown that was going to be in there. Because there was always CM Punk chance, and I was like, they're going to do it once, though. You never know. But no, turned out, fucking Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole were also showing up at the same time. So not only was one of my favorite wrestlers, but, like, three of my favorite wrestlers of all time are suddenly all in the same company now. And I'm just like, yeah, okay, I'll have to take a look at this. And not long after that, when Bryan was going on his insane runs, having matches against Kenny and Hangman and various others, we were saying then, when he first got there, that there needed to be a moment where this guy won the world championship. We were using CM Punk in that position for a long time, but when Punk started to become a bit of a pussy, we kind of pivoted more toward Bryan Danielson being the guy that needed to win the championship. We even, I think, booked scenarios where he was going to win it off of Punk even. So we might have been not that far back. But the point is, we had already begun talking about the idea of Bryan winning the championship back when he was facing Kenny. You know what I mean? So we just didn't know how we were going to get there. You know what I mean? And now we're there a couple of years later. For me, I'm like as high as you could possibly be right now. I will tell you, I'm a little scared of what's going to happen next, because Bryan could end it right here. And on top, walk away from the championship, set up somebody to reach for the sky, you know, like when they win the championship and whatever they do to rectify that, right? Or he could have some kind of match, right, where he puts his career on the line again. Like, he's like, yeah, actually, I'm putting the title and my career on the line now. So if you beat me for this, I'm done, you know? It could be that kind of scenario, you know, where it lasts a little bit longer, but it's not like super long-lived. But there is also a part of me, Charlie, that wants to see him go on a run with this championship and defend it and define it and, you know, create a legacy for it that people can then try and reach toward, you know, like, because I think if anybody ever had the capability of doing it in this company, it was Bryan Danielson, you know? I think Swerve's done a lot of that groundwork, and I think Bryan could take it, run with it, and then elevate somebody else with it and then allow them to have a chance to take it even further, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, no matter how you feel about it, we're talking about a title now that has Bryan Danielson's name on it, Samoa Joe's name on it, CM Punk, Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho. These are all legends in the business. right? And then even the next generation. Well, if you could consider Moxley already in that at that era, but you know,
I'd say MJF's going to go down as a legend.
You have the John Moxley, the Hangman Adam Page, the MJF, the Swerve. This title's legacy in the 5 years of the company is mind blowing. It's absolutely mind blowing. And outside of the all out shit in 2022, which fuck that, it fucking sucked. Like, it, I can't believe.
We can be mad about that, but it also gave us, like, maybe the best singular era of a champion, like, you know, kept winning the championship in Jon Moxley, you know what I mean? Like, the history of the title, you know what I mean?
It sucks the way it all ended. And but, you know, at the time when Punk won that fucking title off Hangman, the vibes were so good. We were getting up for the summer of Punk, and it's just like. You know, I think, getting back to this match, the
CM Punk, cereal bag fumbler.
This was pro wrestling magic at its best, and I can't wait to see what Danielson does with it. Look, is he going to drop it at Wrestle Dream to Swerve again? Maybe. That was my original thought. Maybe he takes this thing to the Dome in January 3rd for that.
I think there's a realistic possibility that they have the match with Darby in the next couple weeks, and then it's Darby versus Swerve at Wrestle Dream. You know what I mean? Like,
it could be a three-way. There's Danielson will defend that title at WrestleDream. There's just no. It's in fucking Washington. There's just no way it doesn't.
I don't know. He might be done, bro. He might be like,
pay-per-view feels like it was made for him.
Might be like, I'm done.
It's 6 weeks away from now. You know, that's happening. But let's talk about Swerve's title reign here. So he wins it off Samoa Joe in just one of the ultimate crowning achievement moments.
Joseph from Samoa. Currently filming Twisted Metal right now, right? That's why he's not on TV. Yep.
Where he won that at AEW Dynasty, another awesome pay-per-view, and then defended the title 6 days later because that is who he is. He is a wrestling champion. To the chagrin of, you know, a lot of the guys and like Busted Open giving him shit, like, oh, yeah, you're going to just burn your championship. And I think, to me, this summed up why he is an alternative.
WWE's
what makes it so different.
Fucking brain.
It's broken their brains.
Having champion being on the show... is fucking burning your championship. Ever. That's so fucking insane to me. Like, I don't...
Yeah, I'll never forget the discourse about that. People were trying to actively be upset he was defending the title against Claudio in Jacksonville on Collision. It blew my fucking mind. But he then defended the title against Christian Cage in a fun feud at Double or Nothing. He defended against Roderick Strong a couple weeks later on a Dynamite. That was a really good match. And then the Will Ospreay feud at Forbidden Door. And then you bring it here where he was involved in the Blood and Guts stuff in between that. But the Ospreay match was awesome in itself. So just a great title reign. It wasn't terribly long. It didn't need to be. It accomplished
everything.
No,
we said that early with Swerve. There was a chance Swerve was going to lose it earlier. It was to Will, even. And we weren't in that category of people that they felt like they needed to disprove, that thought it was just like a placeholder champion for Will.
Swerve
that was never.
Strickland was not a placeholder champion.
No. If anything, he was.
We've never had a placeholder champion in the world title.
I mean, Jon Moxley, you could say, was intended to be one, but like it ended up being his championship in the end because
it ended up being his summer.
Yeah, because he defined that summer, like you said, so they ended up putting it on him, but, you know, like...
But Swerve held it for 127 days, so good title length. People are used to 700-day title reigns now, so I guess...
You know. I mean, look, you know, it's not going to go down as the longest title reign ever, but it's going to go down as...
one of the most memorable.
It's also going to be a huge milestone in Swerve's career, no matter where he ends up being a star. Like, if he doesn't stay with AEW for some reason, which I don't think is likely, but, like, if say
he
went back.
He did re-sign. They announced he signed a new contract.
But let's say he were to not have re-signed and went back to WWE. I don't think this would still be part of his legacy. I think that's something that, like, I think now is true. It's that I think if you've won this championship in AEW, I do think that actually elevates your stock over in the other company. Like, I do think that's why they felt like they needed to legitimize Cody. Not even kidding. You know what I mean? Like, because Cody needed to be that level of star. And I think he would have been in AEW if he hadn't done that dumb shit. You know what I mean? Like, realistically. I mean, that's the only thing missing from our AEW's title legacy, dude, is Cody. And I do think we're going to fix that one day. Hopefully. Maybe not, though.
I have to imagine we will also. But that being said, guys,
Cody versus Dustin, career versus career for the title.
Career
versus
career, yeah. Thanks for hanging out. We will be back next week with our normal ESE, our weekly show. If you enjoyed this, come back for more. Just hit follow on whatever podcast platform you happen to be listening to this on. We have a Twitter, Eat Sleep Elite, where we run some polls, and we just kind of retweet some of the
Since we're not doing one this week, what the fuck was our poll for last week? Let's talk about it.
We didn't do one because of this. I didn't
didn't
run a poll.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, yeah, so, we could run one this week. What'd you guys think of the pay-per-view?
Yeah. Be a thumbs up or thumbs down. I mean, hey, maybe you hated it. So, yeah,
maybe
thanks
you thought
a lot,
Britt Baker should become the TBS champion.
Maybe.
Maybe hey. You thought, you know what you know what you might have thought, Charlie? You might have thought that there was one thing missing from this show. And one thing that was missing from this episode of the podcast, we mentioned him briefly earlier. You know what I'm talking about.
You're goddamn right. Wardlow, take us home, baby girl.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.